You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Cocoa, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Cocoa, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in Cocoa, Florida. Sunny Cocoa, Florida, right adjacent to Melbourne, Rockledge, Titusville, everywhere else.
Cape Canaveral.
Palm Bay, where you're
right.
Cape Canaveral, yeah. Palm Bay. So we're heard right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9. 100.7 and online.
That's right, all over the World Wide Web, www.1510wwbc. You can hit that listen live button and hear us live on any one of your listening devices that you might have. And then, of course, if you're not able to listen to the whole show, you can get your download from right from that page. Just go to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and you'll find all of our shows by date. We also post it on our Facebook page, and we also post it on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And you know, Sita, this weekend, much like many weekends in town, we have live music all over the place. And I just wanted to start out the show today because a good friend of ours with St. Francis Reflections Foundation, they wanted us to let everyone know about a fundraiser that they're having. It's going to be at the USSA Space Coast Complex, which is on Stadium Parkway in Melbourne. This is going to be on April 21st at 7 o'clock. And they are having the Elton John tribute band, Greggy and the Jets, good friends, to support the St. Francis Reflections program, including North Star and then Child Grief. And also they're honoring their veterans that particular evening. So make sure that you get your tickets. You can go to St. Francis Reflections Foundation and get your ticket information. Again, that's April 21st in just a few weeks.
That's right.
Yes.
And for our listeners who are tuning in, we want to say thank you to all our sponsors and all the people who listen to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And they do find our show very unscripted, very educational, very informative, quite interesting. And I get a lot of emails and text and Facebook messages, and people are really pleased with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. A lot of folks are really amazed that we've been on air for almost 14 years.
I think we hit the 14 mark.
That's right.
We actually did.
And it's nice to have a place where you and I, Ellen and Allie, and sometimes if we have other people guesting with us and hosting, that we have a place where we can have a voice, a responsible voice. We know freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we do our best to speak about things, the environment, education, housing for the homeless. Gosh, we even talk to every single author everywhere in the world that found out about Sita and Friends and call it. You know what,
Al? And movie producers.
Everybody has a story to tell, right?
Yes.
Everybody has a story to tell. So it's kind of nice when people call us and they say, hey, I want to talk about my book. And then you speak to them and you find out that they're writing this book because something happened in their life.
And we say a lot of times that people, we don't have enough activists in towns or in communities. And authors are, and musicians are, another form of activism. You know, we have people that are out trying to sell their stories or tell their stories so that way the messages can be received by everybody in a form that they're prepared to hear it in. Like I said, with music or with poetry or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, today is no different, right? Our show today, we've got on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. My good friend Ellen is here with me as usual. We're doing a little chit-chat while we await our friend Robert Arthur is supposed to be calling in from Barbados. We hope he has Wi-Fi. We hope he has a landline. And we'll make sure to get him on as soon as we can. He seems like he's having an issue. He wrote a book called The Bougainvillea Tree. And I was really impressed with the way he wrote that book and how he used his characters to tell a story about what he hopes to gain from helping the youths in his country and just doing some great things for Barbados. Then our second segment is Dr. Petra Dieter. She will be calling in to speak about her award-winning film called Reborn. It is a film about child abuse, domestic violence, and so much more. She is a researcher and an award-winning film director, as well as a social impact builder. She has won many awards. She raises public awareness and champions many social changes. And hopefully she'll call in from California.
That's right.
There's a time difference.
That's right, exactly. So what were you and your family able to do this weekend? What did you get to do for the Easter weekend, I should say?
I went to work Saturday and Sunday, and we ended up having a little feast over at Kimmy and Scott's. They went to church, and then she had a magnificent feast. But you know what? I was like, she had brisket, and she had roast beef, and she had kind of things Danny would like.
Right.
She had ham, macaroni and cheese. I mean, it was just really good. They bought some stuff and some things, too. But, yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, you know, it's like Easter is a time of new beginnings.
That's right.
Of peace, of joy, and reflection. You know, a lot of people, they reflect on their life the year before. Some people lost loved ones, and it's a good time to remember people. So what about you guys?
Ours was pretty much the same. I was able to go to sunrise service on Sunday, and then got to spend a little time with friends, which was nice. But you're right, Sita. Easter is all about reflection, and part of the Catholic religion, you know, again, everybody has a different customs and traditions that they like to do. Part of the Catholic religion is giving up things for Lent. So one of the practices, if you will, is early on in the month, we kind of pick something that maybe is not serving us too much anymore, and we give that practice, whatever that happens to be, up for Lent. So I've seen family members give up smoking, give up drinking, give up cursing, give up saying certain words or whatever it happens to be. So it can be just about anything. And mine was all about finding more love. So mine wasn't about giving up as much for my practice. It wasn't about giving up as much. It was about finding more.
Yeah.
About finding more love, about reconnecting with people that I hadn't seen or talked to in a while. And so it can be just as much about giving up as it is about giving out.
Right.
And giving for.
And I think it's a good time for people to think about, you know, what makes our world a beautiful place. Things like trust, respect, togetherness. You know, many people go through the motions of life on a daily basis, and they don't stop to think, well, what is my purpose on earth?
Right. Exactly.
Why
right.
am I here? It's so nice. Like, I was chatting with Maddie and her little friend, and we went for a little walk, and we were talking about just Easter and Ramadan and Christmas and all the holidays. And it's kind of nice that we have these holidays to bring togetherness with families.
That's right.
You know?
And educate, too, so because not everyone knows about the different religions or the different things that go on. And a lot of them are, you know, a lot of other traditions and other customs are very enlightening to me. I like finding out about new cultures and new things that are going on. And in your family, it's like the UN.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you got a little bit of everybody. You got
it is.
You
it
have
is.
A practice in every religion almost and every background, which is really cool.
I do. It's really nice to belong to a family where you appreciate Christianity, you appreciate Hinduism, you appreciate Ramadan when it's the Muslim holiday. I appreciate
Jewish.
The Passover because I have all my Jewish friends and family doing it. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's one God. It's just different paths to him, right?
That's right.
And I always say, if something makes you happy, go for it. Mm-hmm. As long as you're not hurting anybody. But I think what we should do, Elle, is maybe call Robert from my cell phone and see if we could get a voice call.
I will.
And you could see if we could hook up with him in Barbados that way. And then you work your magic with the mics like you've done before. You know? You know what? It's one of those things where you wake up every day and you ask yourself, what can I do to make the world a better place? And you give it your best. Now, nobody's perfect. No family's perfect. Nobody's perfect. And we try our best every day. I was talking to a friend of mine, a 99-year-old lady yesterday, because she was watching what we were all watching on Friday in Tennessee, when we saw those two fellas, Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, being expelled from the chambers in Tennessee. And she said, you know, nurse, I'm 99 years old, and we fought a good fight for civil rights, for people to have the rights in this country, the right to free speech, the right to an education, the right to buy a home, the right for women to have control over their bodies. And she said, I'm going to be leaving this planet, and I feel like everything I fought for in the 40s and 50s and 60s, it's going. And it makes you think.
Like, what a perspective.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it makes you think, like, why are we here? And I like to lend my voice to certain causes, as you do as well, but we have to be very careful nowadays, because there are some people that, for no reason, they can get very violent.
Yes.
You know, and we're watching
the emotional intelligence of people. That was one of the shows that I think we had talked about having a conversation about, is just about, in general, people have a tough time understanding from an emotional intelligence standpoint that everyone really does have a perspective. And just because you have a different perspective than someone else doesn't necessarily mean that you're wrong or that you're right.
Yeah.
That's why people write books.
Right.
And that's why people get into finding the core values in their organization or their mission, so that that way they can start sending the message out, just like our friend
Robert Arthur,
who's just calling.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
So for our listening audience who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in the Cocoa, Florida, we're speaking with our friend Mr. Robert Arthur. He was born in Wylie, St. Michael, Barbados. He's raising a family of five. He has an older brother, a sister, a wonderful childhood playing sports. And we're going to go right to him and let him talk to us about his book, The Bougainvillea Tree.
And you're going to have to turn your radio off in the background there, Robert, because unfortunately it's giving us some feedback here at the station.
In the background. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
So we want to hear all about you and get to know you. And so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah.
As soon as you turn that radio down.
Yeah.
Okay. I am off right now.
Yeah, because we're hearing an echo.
There we go.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, and thank you for calling in today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Okay. Good morning, Gordon. Good morning to everyone. Well, basically, I grew up in Caribbean island of Barbados, a beautiful Caribbean island. Had a normal childhood, good education. You know, have fun with my friends as I was growing up. But, you know, in the Caribbean, in Barbados especially, we had a background of reading books. We had a background where we had to read books. Now, not only at school, but when we got home. I guess in that time, because I'm 46 years old right now, we didn't have access to a lot of television. We didn't have all those distractions, so we had to read books. You know, the Enid Blyton, the Hardy Boys, and stuff like that.
Oh, your favorite, Sita. So, Nancy Drew Mysteries.
Yeah. I think it's a Caribbean thing.
I was just going to say, it must be a Caribbean thing.
Because, you know, back home, we didn't have cable and phones and all that. And God knows, if you had a copy book, you had to keep it for school. You couldn't go writing and scribbling things in that either.
Yes, you will get punished.
Yeah, because then your parents don't have enough money to buy another copybook for you, right? So the importance of reading. So you wrote this book because you wanted to be an influencer. You wanted to influence the youths in Barbados. That you think at sometimes, and I see it as well, that they're going on the wrong path. So tell us a little bit about the book, the characters in the book, and how you came up with the name.
Right. All right. Let me just start with the name first. A bougainvillea tree is one of the most tenacious trees that you have. No matter, I wrote it in the book, actually. My job was to trim a bougainvillea tree, and I hated that job. I really hated that job. You know, it had a lot of thorns, you know.
Yes.
It was pretty tough to cut. So I recognize that, you know, I was trying to be smart one day, and I tried to cut it right down. And, you know, just in a few months later, this thing sprung back up. So I realized that the bougainvillea tree, just like the kingdom of God, no matter how you try to destroyed, it will always spring back up, you know?
Yes.
So that was my...
It's like rebirth. It's like a rebirth. It's keep coming, springing alive again, right?
Yes, right. And during the times, like right now, bougainvillea trees are barbarous, are very flourishing, and it's the driest period of the year. Everything is, the grass is brown here, but the bougainvillea trees are very beautiful, you know? The flowers really bloom at this time of the year, which is the dry season in Barbados. So the thing is that we grew up with the Enid Blyton books, the English books, you know. We had the Hardy Boys. It had a lot of, I think we had a book name, a scientific book name, Tell Me Why. We had all those type of books. And I was getting concerned that the screen time that children, you know, like they sort of put in make it important, right? The screen time that the children have nowadays is dangerous. I did my research and I realized it does not help the development of children's brains. So I observed my daughter and I realized that in her time with a lot of Dora, right? And
Dora,
I realized that she was able to repeat every episode, and I didn't like that. You know, so I told myself, you know what, let me decide to write a little story. And then the story evolved into an entire book. It took years, but I thought that it was important that we have in the Caribbean a Caribbean version of a story. Because Enid Blyton have the English version, you know, they have like the things, you would see things like radishes, things that we don't grow down here.
That's right. I always wondered about that. They would have, and we never ate mushrooms. They would have things about mushrooms and radishes and parsley and all that stuff. Yes.
Right. So I could not relate to that. So I wanted something that she could relate to. I actually, when you really look at it, you have the Brer Rabbit, you know, and when you look at all these characters and stuff, is like we can't relate to this in the Caribbean. So they say, look, let me write something that is Caribbean relatable, you know.
Yes.
So I decided, let me just go with this journey. And I wrote this entire book, and at the end of the book I realized, you know what, let me make this an animal character book, because you have to be realize that children don't like reading books, and you have to make it sort of interesting. So Animal Farm, you know, which was one of the greatest books I ever written, that inspired me to do it in animal characters, and I decided to use the animals that I, you know, everybody can see in Barbados so that they could relate to this book, right? And for safe measure, I threw in a couple pictures that I took around the island to, you know, to make it more attractive.
So what are some of the animals you use? Did you use the iguana, the agouti, animals like that?
Well, we don't really have those types here. We have animals like the egret. You know, we have the main character is what you call a black-belly lamb.
Oh, Ellen is busy Googling all these animals now.
You're right.
Yes, yes.
Right, so you have the egret, right? So the funny thing about it is that these animals are like animals that people will see every day. So I think a child will be excited to see these animals, right? So the black belly, what they use the black belly lamb, because it obviously Jesus Christ is also known as the lamb. So he had to put in that animal in there. So there's also just a normal cow. So it was that would be a bull cow, you know, but it was interesting because a bull will be used as a sacrifice in the Bible. And one of the characters had to that died in the book, he was sacrificed.
Oh, so you kind of tied it into some of the Bible things that you learned as well.
Right.
Some of the events.
Right. Even right. Some a lot of the names in the book are actually Bible names, right? And I try to tie the character of or the experience of the Bible character to the character in the book, so that people that you know, you're trying to get people to read the Bible, right?
Yes.
So when people have a little correlation between the Bible and this book, they will I think it will be more attractive, you know.
Yes.
They are more attractive. So the a lot of the characters in the book, the way how they were developed, the things that they did, they're very similar to what happened in the Word of God, you know. So I use the main character and the mentor of the character as both as sacrificial elements within the book.
And your main character, Peter, he's staying true to what Barbados is famous for, which is a variety of the plant and animal life. So Peter is coming of age, and he's facing a lot of challenges, and he's lonely and depressed, and he has a friend in the Lord, according to the book and how your character
correct.
Is. Yes.
Correct. Because the interesting thing is that I sat down, when he was formulating the book, I sat down and thought of all the problems that we have in society in the Caribbean. Because if you read a book from the U.S., you're going to get U.S. problems. If you read a book from England, you're going to have U.S. English problems. So the Caribbean problems that we encountered, like alcoholism, you know, broken families, bullying, you know, lust, all of these things with the Barbadian and the Caribbean problem, right?
Yes.
The issues that we have here, I wrote them into the book so that you could show people that there's a way to conquer problems without using, it's all dependent on yourself. You have God as your, dependent on God to overcome these problems. So I threw in all these characters. So he had a problem where he felt he did not feel accepted by his family, which is a common problem that we have. They bring a lot of loneliness with teenagers, you know, and they at that time they tend to lean on negative things when they're teenagers. So this is an escape route into the right path, right? So
yes, and Robert, in your book, Peter finds that his faith is the key for his survival.
Correct. Very good. Because the thing is that when he realized that he's different, right? I thought you could see nowadays, a lot of people are very, very conscious of their looks. Well, in this book, you know, it's about celebrating what you have. You know, God gave all of us a talent, a look, you know, and we have to use it to glorify him. So he realized that he was adopted, right? Another problem that we have.
Yes.
But he had to come to grips that though he's adopted, he's still part of a family, you know. God arranged for him to be adopted, right? He realized, if you look at the whole correlation, he's a sheep, and he's adopted by goats. So we have that similarity, but we have to separate the sheep from goat, right?
Yes.
So he realized, because in Barbados, the black-bellied sheep looks very similar to a goat at a certain age. So he realized he's different. So he went to seek after his real parents, realized that they're dead. Then there's the guy, besides a mentoring, realizing that he's seeking after a father, so he introduces him throughout the book to the Heavenly Father, right? So it is a really coming of age story where he is trying to get to know about Almighty God, but at the same time trying to forgive his family, you know, for keeping secrets from him.
So he was a bit of an outcast, and he had a lot of challenges.
Right.
And so with your book, The Bougainvillea Tree, you're hoping that children can be encouraged to read the book and maybe identify with Peter, because we've got that same problems in Trinidad and Tobago, in Jamaica, in India, in Indo. Teenagers oftentimes feel lonely and depressed and misunderstood. And so you're hoping that Peter could help people to find some sort of faith, something that comforts them, and move on and face life.
Correct. Because the interesting thing is that you, we, if you look at it very carefully, if you look at even the way how people decide to look, people try to imitate other people. What this book is trying to tell children to do is love themselves for who they are, you know?
Yes.
And let God be your strength. There's a message going out nowadays. Your people are saying, you know, to have a lot of self-esteem. I always tell people, there's nothing wrong with your self-esteem being low if you understand that God is the one that is your strength. That's what the Bible says, the joy of the Lord is my strength. Right?
Oh, how beautiful.
The problem is that people don't have anything to believe in anymore. And so
correct.
God is the, so is the, and when you believe in God or when you believe in some higher power, you know, regardless of who you call him, that creates that spark within yourself to love yourself and to start caring about yourself as well. And self-love is really what comes out of a relationship with God.
Self-care,
self-love.
So your book really is beautifully written, and the positive impact of seeking God is one of the themes of the book. So talk to our listening audience, our dear friend, Mr. Robert Arthur, who is taking the time to call in from the lovely island of Barbados, where we all know where Rihanna is from. Barbados.
Yes.
So talk to us about how that positive impact of having God in your life has helped you as a young man.
Yes, you know, like I would say I had an excellent childhood. I had a very enjoyable childhood. I didn't experience a lot of things, but you I don't live on an island. I mean, by myself. But you see things happening to other people, right? And you have compassion on them, you want to help them. And one of the things that I realized over the years that help people, especially young people, is education and reading. Reading is one of the most important things to do when your mind is being formed. Because, for instance, watching a show on television, which is an already created art form, it doesn't give you the chance to imagine. But if you read a book, you have to imagine the scene, you have to imagine the colors, what the characters look like, and stuff like that. So I believe that, number one, when I came to know about God, I realized that God planted gifts inside of all of us, and we have to utilize these gifts. These gifts are supposed to help other people. It's not only to help yourself, because some people think that, yes, I'm going to monetize my gift, but it is really about helping your brother, your sister, you know, help your neighbor, you know, love your neighbor as you love yourself. So every gift that I realize that I have right now, and thing is ongoing. I am finding so much things about myself when I gave my life to Christ at 27, and the amount of things that I learned about myself from 27 to now, that's like 20 years. It far exceeds what I sort of expected for myself. You know, they have plans for yourself.
Yes.
It's like far. So when God, when I tapped into God, it's like, whoa, all these gifts inside of me, and I did not know. So I mean, it's like, I wish I knew about God when I was like a year old.
Oh, how beautifully said. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with an author who's taken the time to call in from the lovely island of Barbados, Mr. Robert Arthur. And we're speaking about his book, The Bougainvillea Tree. And this book is a coming-of-age story highlighting what it's like to be part of the tapestry of growing up in the Caribbean, mainly, of course, in Barbados. And the main character in the book is Peter. Peter is an animal that is found in Barbados.
Yeah.
And it's a fictional account, and it's the story is seen through the eyes of the animal, strongly influenced by God and faith, and facing challenges of loneliness and bullying and lust and all that. But for our listeners who are tuning in, I was wondering how many people know that the Barbados, the name Barbados, is derived from the bearded fig trees. Barbados became independent from Britain on November 30th, 1966. And there's so many fun facts about Barbados that we would find the author, Robert, has entwined in his book. So talk to us a little bit, Robert, what children would find in this book as they read it and find out about Barbados that they didn't know before.
Actually, the one of the things that was interesting is the places in Barbados, right? The places in Barbados, like, there's a train track. I have a picture of a train track in Barbados, right? In within the book, there was a train that we had a train like in the beginning of the 19th century, and this used to service go right around Barbados. So a lot of children never saw this train, but if they go to Bathsheba, right, or Bath in that's on the east coast, they will actually see like remains of the track. So if people who are visiting the Barbados, make sure you go down to Bath, the beach at Bath, and you'll see some remains of the track that's there, right? Now we would love another train running about because traffic is horrible.
Yes. I have two questions before we go off air really quick. Do you think education helps to deter people from committing crimes? Because we're watching the rise of gun violence and murders and things happen in the Caribbean that we it's crazy today, not just there but all over the world. You think education helps to deter crime?
It is the best solution. It is the best solution because especially when you read the Word of God, which is a book of peace, right?
Yes.
Now when you read the Word of God and it says like forgive others, you know, bless your enemies and stuff like that, you read that and the thing about reading that's important is that when you read something, you actually like see the words in front of you, you actually remember the words. So say for instance you come across a person, an enemy, what happens inside of you, it triggers that word, right? And the word has power, right? Life and death is in the power of the tongue as well. So you are able to defuse situations by what you read. If you do not have any, if you did not read anything, the mind goes towards, like, what the Bible calls it vain imagination. So a person is going to remember, for instance, if they watch a John Wick movie, they're going to remember how John Wick dealt with his problems. Violence.
Yes.
But if you read the Bible and you remember the word of words about loving enemies, you know, when the situation comes, you're going to remember, right? So the funny thing about it is that people on an authority don't really believe that. But reading, its research has proven that reading or a lot of reading, you know, that's why the crime rate is so high, because people tend to it's all down to the imagination. What is in your imagination that causes you to make a decision?
So my friend Robert, we have 1 minute left. I wanted to ask you, where can we find your book? Our listening audience and Viewpoint with Steve and Friends, we are just amazed at your the way you speak. You're so calm. You sound like you found your purpose in life, and through this book, you're telling such a beautiful story. You're encouraging others to write stories as well. I would love to have you back later on as well, but we've got to go to a commercial break on our second segment. Tell us where we can find your book, my friend.
Right. My book is on Amazon.com. So you have it in the digital copy, or you could purchase it by a hard copy. And I expect that after this interview today, that people will be inspired to write their own story, because that's what you would love to see, that people help other people with their story, their testimony that they have. I can't say it's easy to write a book, but it is necessary to tell stories to help people. So it's on Amazon.com, and it's under the name is The Bougainvillea Tree by Robert Arthur, and you should be able to find it there.
And we will have all of those links posted on our blog post with this interview, as well as on our Facebook page and on CETAMediaInc.com. But we need to take this time to go listen to our sponsors real quick before we continue with Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. Robert Arthur, thank you so much for being with us today and calling in from Barbados. And we will be back right after these messages.
Christian Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or take-out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heating up the airwaves on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. We're also heard on AM 1510 and online everywhere. Ellen, oh my gosh, what a great day.
It is a great day. And right online, 1510 WWBC, you can just hit that listen live button and you'll hear us on any one of your listening devices. Of course, all of our archive shows are on 1510wwbc.com by date, and then also on our Facebook page, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and also on our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
And our second guest is on, and it's amazing, calling in from Vietnam.
Right, exactly.
First we had Mr. Robert Arthur from Barbados, and now we have Dr. Petra Dieter. Petra, I'm not going to take a lot of the time to read your bio, but my goodness, you are a filmmaker. You made an award-winning film. You're the director of a social impact. You're a social impact builder. Let's talk a little bit about you and how you got involved. You are the CEO and founder of the Victim to Hero Institute. My goodness, we need 2 hours for you.
But oh, you are so sweet.
Oh,
thank
my
you
God.
So much for the opportunity to be here. Really, I'm so grateful.
Oh, my Lord. Look at this. Your films. Just talk to us a little bit. How did you get involved in making these films?
Well, actually, I think I never actually thought I would be in the film industry. But then, you know, being in L.A., somehow you always kind of end up there. But I kind of started wanting to make film, but then I started to notice all these different social issues, and as an artist, you kind of want to express yourself, right? Your art is actually about you, very much about you. And then a lot of people don't realize this, and I was one of those people, when you are a victim of a form of abuse, that you yourself don't realize that you're being abused. And this is very common for psychological abuse. And so I was that child victim of parental alienation, and we'll explain a little bit about what parental alienation is, but I didn't recognize this until I was in my 40s, and so the moment I realized that, I thought I have to make films to tell this story, and this is how I got involved into parental alienation, and I am very passionate about sharing what this is. And so parental alienation is essentially what happens when someone, usually a parent, try to destroys the relationship of the child with the other parent, and this usually happens in a separation or a divorce. So, you know, maybe by brainwashing the child about the other parent, like saying maybe, oh, your dad is abusive, or he's an alcoholic, or saying that, oh, your mom is so emotionally unstable, or she doesn't care about you, things like that. So it's destroying the relationship between the child and the other parent. Sometimes it's by withholding the child and preventing the other parent from having access to the child. And sometimes even against a custody order, like maybe they get divorced and then the court may say, okay, you know, the mother has a child from, let's say, Monday at 5 p.m. and then maybe the father, or maybe not the father, maybe the grandmother, you know, on the father's side, or maybe a school teacher or someone, take the child away and prevent the mother from having access to the child at 5 p.m. on Monday, according to the court order. And that's called custody interference, you know, and people don't even realize that that's actually a form of, it's actually a criminal offense. And so that's, that kind of behavior is called parental alienating behavior.
Right, it's almost like the parent who is trying to be, to obstruct the other one, they're planting a seed and obstructing, because that child is listening to the parent. And I've seen this as well growing up as a child in our family, whereas one parent will start ill-speaking the other parent to the child and to other people around the child. And you're thinking that your mother or your father is so horrible because it's coming from a parent.
Right, exactly. Because as a child, you're vulnerable to your caretaker, right? So emotionally, you trust them because, you know, this is someone, the only one that you know, like, oh, the key person that you trust. So you listen to that. But it, essentially, that parents weaponize the child, using the child to harm the other parent because they want to hurt their ex-partner, right, their ex-spouse. So they use the child as a weapon. But what they are doing is actually, that's the form of child abuse, because it's psychologically destroying the child, because the child now doesn't love the other parent. They're wondering, like, what's wrong with me that my dad or my mom doesn't love me? Or what's wrong with me that I can't have a normal dad or a normal mom? They don't realize that their dad or their mom loves them. And actually, that's what happened to me. You know, I lost the relationship with... are we still on? I'm sorry.
Yes, you are. You are. You're coming across loud and clear. And it's amazing. It's amazing what you're speaking about, because it's so true. It is, when you think about it as a grown up now, it is a form of child abuse.
Exactly, because it impacts you for the rest of your life. And the thing is, for me, I thought that my dad didn't want anything to do with me. I thought that he abandoned me, that, you know, there was never any complaint about, like, him being abusive, but there's definitely, you know, this attitude that my dad didn't want anything to do with me. And then in my 40s, somebody in my family, my distant relative, came and said to me, I can't stand it anymore. I have to tell you the truth. And then I start to look up for information about him, and I found information, a website that he left for me, because by that point I found out that he already passed. And he left a website for me with his diary, with letters between him and my mother. So I grew up without a father, thinking that I was abandoned. And all, you know, as a child growing up with a father, or a child growing up with a mother, it's you're a broken person.
Yeah, and you walk around with all this hurt. But, you know, I like what you say. I was reading some things that you've written, and it's not about father's rights versus mother's rights. It's a child protection issue.
Absolutely.
And if we want a better place, we have to all educate ourselves and communicate with each other and take the education that we're learning from you and others like you and put it into good use and good action. So I really commend you. So keep going. Yes. So you grew up thinking your father didn't care about you at all.
Right. So I mean, like, all my life, I didn't have him in my life. And yet here I found this website where he was desperately trying to find a way to connect with me. And he, you know, he loved me so much. And that just changed my life, because, you know, for the first time in my life, I was healed in a little bit. But then at the same time, I was living with so much guilt because I was rejecting him, because I thought that he didn't want me. So when he was reaching out, when he was alive, I was so rude and cold to him. I was rejecting him. So now I have to live with that guilt. And so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, now because this is me trying to make up to him by helping other people, because I don't want this to happen to other people. And so when I got into this work, I interviewed so many other adult children of parental alienation like me, and all of us are walking around broken, and we have so much guilt. By the time that we recognize it, it's always too late.
It sounds like it's all about dysfunctional family dynamics. When you speak, I'm thinking about Hindi films. You know, the Bollywood films used to address all these things, and you would see a person go through all this hurt and heartache, only in the end to find out that they were loved, but it's just that somebody put a wedge between the parents or themselves, whether it's another family member, a neighbor, just a hateful, spiteful person within the family.
Oh my God, I think Bollywood films are incredible at, you know, creating, like, you know, expressing this emotional story. Seriously, right? I mean, and it's always so, how would I say it?
It's dramatic. It's dramatic when the closing comes and the person finds out that, oh my God, I was loved. I was wanted.
Right.
It's just this mean old person. But so for our listening audience, let's just say, we just want to tell our listening audience who we're speaking to, I'm so amazed that I got this amazing guest. So we're speaking with Dr. Petra Dieter, and she's an award-winning film director and a social impact builder. She's the founder and CEO of an organization called A Victim to Hero Institute, a company that provides trauma-informed solutions, education, resources, and support for victims of psychological abuse due to dysfunctional family, which, oh gosh, I know many of those. And her film, Reborn, is about domestic violence, and she won over 24 international awards and screened at festivals and theaters around the world. And then your other film, Parental Alienation, and the other film, The Aftermath, she won the Best Director at the 2022 Golden State Film Festival and Best Education Film Award in 2022 Universal Multicultural Film Festival. You are amazing. Thank you so much for what you do. So if we wanted to check out your website and maybe get people to donate so they can help to this cause, what is your website?
My website is victimtohero.com. So when people go there, there's a lot of information. We're not selling anything, so we really just want to be there to support, you know, the victim and the family. If people want to donate, actually right on the front page, but it's right at the bottom. It's tiny little thing. There's a button there for people to donate.
Right.
We're also on Patreon. So, you know, if people want to subscribe on Patreon to support us, we are very grateful for our supporter. But we're not here to, you know, it's not about money. It's really about making a change because, you know, I think it's important for us to fix child abuse.
Right.
And actually, by the way, April.
Go ahead. Before you go, I just wanted to tell our listeners that what you're doing is also scientific and evidence-based. You truly believe we could find solutions because you have the evidence and the science behind what you do, because you've interviewed so many people with similar circumstances that have been walking around with pain and hurt due to the psychological trauma caused by others.
Right. So actually, I am a researcher from University of Tasmania, and in the department of psychology and school of, you know, the medical school there. So I also do a lot of research into parental alienation, and I have interviewed many, many adult children of parental alienation, as well as parents that lost the relationship with their children due to parental alienation. Because, you know, this people don't realize how serious this is and how widespread it is. It's not a gender issue. It happens to both mom and dad and son and daughters. And, you know, it's not, unfortunately, like, it doesn't discriminate whether you're rich or poor or anything. You know, whether you're educated or whether you, you know, don't have any degree. Or it doesn't matter. It happens to everybody. And the thing is, a lot of people don't recognize that they are a victim, or they don't recognize when they look at a victim. And, you know, most of the time people don't see, when they see a child not seeing a parent, and then they listen to the other parent, they might assume that, oh, you know, their mother abandoned this child, you know, how horrible, you know, or that father abandoned this child. You know, they usually hear the one-sided story, and that's very dangerous. You know, you have to start questioning, why doesn't this child see the other parent and not just take one-side story? Like, for example, one of my films that you mentioned, is actually about a really tragic case where a child who was 10 years old and he was eventually killed by his father because the father was trying to alienate him against the mother, and then eventually he was discovered by the court, and the court said, hey, stop alienating this child. And so the moment he was discovered, he killed the child. And the thing is, throughout this whole process, you know, for years that he was alienating this child, all the friends and family listened to his story and assumed that the mother was a horrible one. You know, she was amazing, sweet lady, and yet in the meanwhile, all the people who never met her heard all this story about how she's a prostitute and she's a drug addict and she was, you know, living homeless or from place to places. And meanwhile, you know, here she's actually a nurse who's, you know, really loving mom who's desperately trying so many ways to trying to get her son back, and then she couldn't. And in the moment she finally got the court to recognize that the father is the abusive one, you know, the father couldn't stand that because it hurt his ego. That night he shot the child in the head. I mean, you're talking about 10 years old child, completely had so much future ahead of him, and his life was flopped just because of that. And not to mention, I'm talking about that whole community of people around this child never realized that all the stories that they heard about the mother was wrong. And,
yes.
And that's really sad, because as a society, we have to ask questions.
Well, and it always comes down to communication, right? Because I like that you believe, like I do, in a proactive approach. It means you're not going to sit back and whine and cry about it. The minute you find out, you take action. You try to find that person and sit down. Because, you know, like, I know people that graduate from law school and medical school and open a business, and they don't have their children there or their family members, because somewhere along the line there was a story told, there was a narrative that this one didn't like this one, and this happened and that happened, and before you know it, it's a generation after generation. It's like a generational curse that follows people when they don't start saying, well, wait a minute, why wasn't I liked? Why didn't this person want me in their home? Why wasn't I invited to something? And I think your films really touch on exactly what's happening with dysfunctional families.
Right, no, for sure. Like, I agree with you. It's about communication. It's about raising awareness. It's about, you know, holding the abuser accountable. And yeah, it definitely takes everybody. It takes really, like, everybody should be responsible. And especially people that are in the position of, you know, of power. For example, school teachers. Or, you know, therapist, doctor, legislator, you know, policymaker. Because, I mean, I talk to so many legislators, like senators and, you know, house reps and things like that, and they are not aware of this, or they were misinformed about this issue. I talk to, you know, teachers are not aware of this. I talk to, like, law enforcement officers. I mean, like, I talked to a law enforcement. I had an interview just the other day, like 2 days ago. And this law enforcement officer has been working in the field for 29 years, and he was an alienated dad, and he still didn't know what parental alienation was, or parental child abduction, or you know, interference with child custody is a criminal offense and things like that. It's crazy. So we have to have the conversation. We have to raise awareness, and everybody has to start asking questions instead of making assumption or just believing one-sided stories or
right.
narrative.
Right, or questioning the relationships in your mind. So if you met somebody new and they ask you, can you define what parental alienation is in 30 seconds or less, would you do that for us on our show? Because I'm fascinated by the term, because I know of it, I've heard of it, but I've never heard it so eloquently spoken of as the way you have on your website and your podcast and stuff. So tell us in 30 seconds, what exactly is parental alienation, if you can.
Thank you. Yes, so parental alienation is what happens when someone interferes or trying to destroy a relationship between a child and a parent. and without good cause. So, you know, you have a parent that is not, a parent that is like not abusive, that is fit, good, available, loving parent, and yet someone destroys the relationship between the child and that parent by trying to influence this child, you know, brainwashing the child, bad mouthing about the other parent, about, you know, withholding the child, hiding the child, that, you know, abducting the child. I mean,
it almost reminds me of Stockholm syndrome, and that's where there's like a psychological response to the captor, or the person that, even the one that's talking bad, it's like all of a sudden that especially small children that don't have the emotional intelligence to be able to identify or understand what's happening.
Absolutely. The child then end up being attached to the abusive parent because that's the one they knew. They actually
That's the noisiest, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I like that your awareness, the education programs are designed to train educators, lawyers, mental health professionals, politician, because people don't think about it. Not everyone understands how alienation works and how it can affect you for life. I've seen it in our family where I have 18 brothers and sisters from two sets of parents, and I have nieces and nephews that live right here in the state of Florida but will not reach out to me because of what was told to their parents when their parents were growing up, although we share the same father, or in some cases share the same mother. And it is very hurtful because you ask yourself, well, what have I done wrong, you know?
Wow, I'm so sorry. Because, yeah, you totally relate to this. You can feel the injustice.
Of course.
You can feel the pain, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, you feel rejected for no good reason.
And, well, you know what, I would love to bring you back on later on our show again, because I just love the idea that your programs, they're meant to empower and help so many people. And you are a hero in my mind for making these films and bringing awareness to such, this is a public crisis, because you would see people graduating from college, medical school, wherever, and their family is not sitting there cheering them on. And you often ask yourself, well, why does that person only have the mother sitting there? Where's the father? Where's the grandparents? Where are the aunties and uncles? We want to cheer for each other. We want to be each other's advocates. And we want to have a world where it is about love and humanity and peacefulness and harmony. We do. And your films allow us to do that.
And the other awareness is that we do have another pandemic that's going on. It's called narcissism, where people are doing those exact things to hurt other people for no reason.
Yes.
So, very sad.
Right. Thank you so much. I'm really grateful to be here, and you're absolutely right. It is a psychological condition. It is often caused by narcissistic behavior, characteristic or bipolar and things like that.
So it's happening in politics too. You see the divide between the left and the right, and people who don't even know a politician hates him or her just by listening to what somebody else had to say.
Right. You're absolutely right, yeah.
What an education today,
wow,
Sita.
Love her.
Once again,
calling in
she
from
loves
Vietnam.
You. Yeah, she's coming to Vietnam.
I feel like she's probably my 19th sister. I wonder if my father went there.
Exactly. Well, once again, thank you so much for calling in. And we've shared all of your information on our website, SitaMediaInc.com, and also on our Facebook page. And we will have the podcast of today posted very shortly. Sita, once again, thank you so much for a fantastic guest and another wonderful episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time each and every Monday. Thank you so much for being here with us, and we'll see you next week.